When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Welcome, everybody, to the official Wrestling Inc. AEW Dynamite review here on June 12th, 2024. We're on a many anniversaries. We got like one night stand that happened like 18 years ago that everybody's talking about on Twitter, but I dig it. But here we are. We're going to talk about all about AEW Dynamite. I got two of my absolute favorite people with me, one to my left and one to my right. We got Jimmy Corderas. What were you looking at?
These are the old parking permits that we had back in the day. I wonder if they're still good because Money in the Bank's coming to Toronto. And hey, maybe I can. Oh, that's
2002.
Let them in. No, they might say that to me right there. I don't want to say it out loud.
Well, there's only one way to find out, and let us know if it works, because you know I got a few myself that want to see if they work when next time they're out here. And we got a Flobel Boyce.
Oh, yeah, so excited because 13 days from today is my birthday. So June is definitely a good time for you, boy.
Ooh. So the big 2-9, is it?
I wish. Go on. I haven't been 2-9 forever.
Well, let us know where the party's at. So that way, you know, we all know where the Bacardi's at.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Your house, yeah, for sure.
Cool.
Well, not my house. Whose house?
Swerve's house. I drive.
No. Flobo's house.
Yeah.
No, not it. Actually, the wrong answer. It's in your house. In your house. But speaking of houses, we are going to talk about news. There's no real transition from there. we're just going to go with it. Speaking of news, AEW's FTR out of action indefinitely due to Dax Harwood's injury suffered at Dynasty pay-per-view. Apparently, he put up a video. Not apparently, he actually did it. By the way, apologies in advance, because I say obviously and apparently a lot when I shouldn't. So I'm truly trying to work on that. And I'll give a shout out to all the people in the comments in a second. But Dax Harwood, which was he Dash or Dawson?
That was Scott Dawson.
Okay.
Well, Dash Wilder became Cash Wheeler. That's the way I remember.
Cash Wilder. I thought it was Dash. Yeah, right. Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder. I thought it was Dash Dawson. Anyways, he put up a video on the X, kind of letting him know that he does have an injury. I'm going to say what he said. He said, "I know there are a lot of people, especially in the Twitter world, who don't really care for me too much, but that's okay. But I thought this was the best way that I can talk to the fans and the fans of FTR and finally get this off my chest. At Dynasty, I gave Matt Jackson a pile driver when I landed. It messed my lower back up really bad and caused a severe hematoma that appeared on my lower back. As we know, that's where the brunt of the bumps go for a professional wrestler. I thought I could, you know, tough it out and whatnot. So he's going to be out for a little bit. My question for you, Jimmy, is, you know, there's a little chatter. And again, I tend to avoid all the stuff on Twitter about, you know, just because they're so negative. But there was a little bit where, oh, I thought AEW was supposed to be the, you know, the place where, you know, you're supposed to be healthy and safe and whatnot. Just you, from your experience being, you know, such a veteran in the business, how do you think the balance is determined on whether or not to kind of tough it out or whether to just kind of maybe take a break? Because I know not just there's a lot of insecurities in with pro wrestlers. Yeah. Oh, are they going to remember when I come back? And of course, as fans, we're thinking, dude, of course we're going to remember you. But it's not even just that. It's when somebody kind of steps away for a little bit, guess what? There's a spot right that just opened up for somebody else. So how do you think that balance is determined with some of these wrestlers that obviously you're friends with in the past couple of decades?
Well, that's kind of the problem, because sometimes they think in that mentality where, you know, if I'm out of sight, I'm out of mind. You know, maybe the fans may remember, but creative may not remember and have mm-hmm. something for you. As I say, creative has nothing for you sometimes. So that worry obviously comes into mind. And, you know, Dax is one of those guys. He's the old school guy that, you know, back in the day, as they used to say, I'm going to tough it out. Mm-hmm. I'm going to, especially on a schedule like they have, where they don't have many house shows afterwards, where you have to go through those reps like they did back in the day, where you had to tough it out like for 5-6 days a week. This is a good schedule. You know, guys are getting paid well, and they do have a good medical place plan in place. But at the same time, sometimes the guys are their own worst enemy, because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to, you know, say, hey, I'm hurt. I gotta take some time off, because, you know, especially from something like that. You're delivering the move, and that's the danger of pro wrestling. You guys know that very well, where it doesn't matter what you do, whether you're giving a move or taking a move. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to get hurt, and it's tough to protect yourself while you're trying to protect others at the same time. And I think in this situation with Dax, I think that's probably where it came from, because he was trying so hard to protect the person he was giving the pile driver to. And in a situation like that, your back is sore, you know, you try to tough it out, and it ended up being a bigger deal. So, we feel for him. Hopefully he gets better soon, because that's the main thing for anybody who gets hurt in this industry, that we hope that they all, but they got to, you know, I'm not trying to put it on them, and I'm not trying to put it on the company, because if you don't tell somebody you're hurt, sometimes they just don't know.
Yeah.
Especially when you're trying to mask it.
Pro wrestlers are very selfish, and I mean that in the absolute best way possible, because it's okay to think of yourself. You know, when a lot of people get into this business, they all say, oh, I want a main event the WrestleMania's, I want a main event this, I want to be world champion. Like, that's a very selfish way to think, but that's okay. That's okay. The point I'm getting at, Flobo, is we just saw Dax Harwood in the main event of Dynasty. I'm not Dynasty, I'm sorry, Double or Nothing. Yeah. So, you know, if he would have maybe taken some time off right after Dynasty, I keep messing up, because Dynasty was like 2 months ago. And I'm like, wait, so he's been hurt for like 2 months. So he was just in the main event of Double or Nothing. That means and this is kind of a weird factor, is if he says he can't go, what about his partner? You know, now you got to think of it as a tag team, where like, oh, you know, one guy's out, maybe both guys got to be out, enter somebody other team that maybe, you know, would have been inserted. So we saw something similar like 21 years ago with Kurt Angle, right? He said he had a broken neck, he was hurt, but he's already scheduled to be in the main event of WrestleMania. Like, how do you sacrifice that? Like, what do you think these guys are going through, just, you know, knowing that, man, like, I want my spot, but I'm also like trying to think of the bigger picture as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first things first, when you have those kind of moves that always compress your spine like an accordion, you're going to have a time where it breaks. We're just not built for that to happen. You look at Hogan's leg drop, and he will tell you he has one of the most messed up backs in all of professional wrestling. But you look at the FTR, no one's going to say these guys were small time. But over the past year and a half, we've seen them in kind of a utility role on Collision. I think as an artist, you say, not so much will they remember me, because you have the body of work, but rather, am I still in the plans of a direction? Can I take a break? Will I be stale when I return? And I think a lot of times you just try to say, look, I'm going to hold on to the piece of real hit that I have. And Jimmy, the nail on the head, sometimes you got to save guys from themselves and say, hey, look, we'll get you 100%, but right now you're no help to anybody.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird line that you kind of people have to go through on a regular basis, you know.
And sorry to cut you off, George, but there's something you hit on that made a lot of sense too, that you got to be aware of, because like you said, in this situation, he's part of a tag team, one of their premier tag teams. So it also affects your partner in the long run. So by continuing to work hurt, you may be prolonging the time that you're going to end up being out. So that puts the kind of strain on both of you, as opposed to just the one person. You know what I mean? So,
and it's crazy too, because, you know, I'll talk about it now, because, you know, he was in a match later on. But I was watching Kyle Fletcher, and obviously I never want to discredit his ability in the ring, because he's really, really good. But I almost forgot that, and again, this is me saying, going on what I just said, I almost forgot that he himself is in a tag team in Aussie Open. And I'm thinking, man, poor Mark Davis, when he comes back to active competitiveness, is he going to be part of the mix? Is he going to be part of the Don Callis club? Is he going to come in and say, like, hey, you know, we were a team? So that kind of, and again, they were a pretty big deal, you know, before Mark Davis got hurt. So that, you know, that kind of goes on to everything that I just said about, you know, Dax and Cash. I was going to say Axe and Smash, but I know their playoff was Axe and Smash, and then they're Dax and Cash. But yeah, it just, yeah, you got people just kind of tough it out. And yeah. But speaking of AEW, Tony Khan has been talking a lot recently. You know, some tweets, which we'll get into in a second. But he was talking about the AEW's Collision upcoming residency from Arlington, Texas, in about a month or so. They're going to be in the Esports Stadium from July 20th through the August 17th. They're going to have Death Before Dishonored by Ring of Honor in an episode of Rampage emanating from there. But Tony Khan said, the city of Arlington really wanted to work with us. It created a great opportunity for us to bring an AEW to one of the hottest markets in pro wrestling. The Esports Stadium in Arlington is a beautiful facility. We think it will be a great home for pro wrestling. You know, he said some other stuff as well. Flobo, I do want to ask, do you think this is a good idea? And again, maybe it's out of their hands. Maybe Arlington just flat out giving them a lot of money. And we all know I'm a little bit of a historian, because the thing that comes to my mind
is... A little bit of a historian.
practically 28 days around the same time, literally around the same time, WCW Nitro emanated from Disney's MGM Studios in Florida. And, you know, we saw like a month's full of programming coming from there. As a kid, I didn't care. I just loved to see wrestling. But now I'm a little bit older. Do you think there is going to be that kind of city fatigue from Arlington maybe in week three or week four? Do you think it'll make a difference at all, maybe from a television viewer as well?
Here's my problem with that. I don't think it's going to be fatigue, but my fear is that the crowds will even out and there's going to be a sense of a lack of urgency. Hey, look, I'll catch week three. I'll catch week four. So it may not be, you know, 100% capacity 1 week to 0%, but you might get 35 throughout the four. But that said, if you look at the live entertainment business, AEW needs a new strategy, right? Or a different strategy. You can't compete show to show. This is the distance. You can't keep going on the road because the crowds are smaller, not knocking the brand. The crowds are smaller and it costs money to go on the road. So if you're doing this hub format, this residency to it, why not experiment it in a, what they call the Metroplex, right? This cluster of cities that is the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
What do you think, Jimmy?
No, I think it's an interesting idea. It used to be way back when they used to do Superstars and Challenge. Mind you, they'd tape 3 weeks worth of shows. It was always Monday nights in Brantford, Ontario for Challenge and Tuesday nights in Poughkeepsie, New York. And that's the way it was done. Every 3 weeks, they would tape 3 weeks worth of shows. This is different. They're going to go live every week from the complex, the Esports Complex, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
Which... it's a 2,500 seater, and I get it. Like you said, Flobo, the crowds unfortunately have been down a little bit. And, you know, at least in a facility like this, they probably will, let's say, just sell it out for at least most of the events there because, you know, it is a 2,500 seater. They do have a good core, a good fan base, a hardcore fan base that will definitely go to this thing. But from a business standpoint, like you guys said, the production costs of traveling. You know, the trucks across the country and you know, everything from the production people involved and having to transport them everywhere and having to do the trucks and the stage setting. So I'm assuming that the stage is going to be set up. I don't know if they're going to tear it up and put it down every week or just leave it up there. And maybe it'd be a good idea to leave it up there and have people come in and just, hey, tour the facility and look at what this Now, if I'm not mistaken, it's Collision and Rampage they're doing there, right?
They're doing Collision, and they're doing one episode of Rampage, and they're doing one of the Ring of Honor pay-per-views as well.
Right. So Dynamite is still going to be traveling, but I don't know if they're going to be in that general vicinity, or are they going to travel outward and other places? I haven't seen their schedule yet, so I don't know. But from a business standpoint, they have to try and figure out ways to, you know, trim the budget a little bit, and this may be at least a start into something different. Maybe they could do something similar in other venues that are a little bit bigger once they start, you know, getting a crowd, hopefully.
Do you remember the vibe? Maybe it was just because it was so fresh and so new. The vibe in 93 when Monday Night Raw started and they ran the Manhattan Center all the time?
That was insane because yes, it was a smaller venue, but the crowd, you know, it's so tight and it's so, and they were really into everything. It was a completely different feel. So hopefully that's what they're going for too, because a smaller venue, when you got 2,500 people in a 10,000 seat building, yes, you can hear them go crazy, but a lot of times that sound gets lost. Mm-hmm. When they're in a smaller venue and it's nice and packed and it's tight and the crowd is into it, now you start to hear them and feel them in TV. And even for the boys, too, and the gals, they feel it, too.
And I think it says a lot, too, because, you know, it's week one. They can't, and again, this is me just fantasy booking in some ways, they can't take their foot off the pedal because week one, if there's a great show, I'm going to want to go to week two. You know what I mean? But if I feel like, oh, week one, that was a missable show. I can, like Flobo said, you know what, let me skip week two. You know what, let me just wait till week four. I'm good. You know, like they can't just assume that people are going to just, oh, I live in Arlington. It's a 2,500 seater. Like they can't just sit there and pretend like as if it's going to be like, oh, we have our loyalists. No, like you got to make it look like it's still a must see show on a weekly basis. So that's just me.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a million-dollar question, right? You have the booking of the show, but then you have to really, like, drill down and try to bring some of that flavor that makes people go, whether it is it's in the moment happy or different kind of, like, must-see events, that's going to be the secret sauce I got to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, just a few weeks away, we'll see how it goes, because apparently their fan base are a bunch of sickos. Because Tony Khan tweeted on X or Twitter, he says, I book wrestling for the sickos because that's what I am and that's who I care about. Wake up the bots and tell them that we're having fun over here in AEW. Flobo, are you a sicko?
How do I answer that? Why? Yes, I indubitably, my good man. I'm a wrestling enthusiast, right? Not only have I been covering it, you and I have been covering these things on podcasts for 5, 7, 8 years, right? That's just us being things. We have to be fans of it because it is a slog. There are no reruns. But I don't want to be critical of Tony Khan because everyone else in the planet has been critical of Tony Khan at some point in the world. But I can tell you this. When someone knows that they're kind of not the cool guy, you hear language like, we're having fun. I'm just doing me. And that's great. But you're not painting on the side of the road. You are running the number two company in the country. I think you didn't have to say that. Just keep your head down, get the crowd like as good as it is, and make it happen. You being like 6 months ago, oh, no, we're Pepsi. These guys are so-and-so. Now it's, oh, we're having fun over here. The bots are totally against us. It's like, what captain of what ship are you leading right now, sir? Man, just give us the product. Give us the moves and holds and snapmares and pyro. Give me some of that.
Yeah, for me, it sounds like he's just trying to play the sympathetic figure, the underdog, and trying to fight from underneath, and everybody's against us. No, Tony, we're not against you. We want you to succeed. We want the company to succeed for everybody you're employing because you're giving everybody options and opportunities to ply their craft and doing something they love. The problem I have with these tweets are, here's a guy, and you know, I've been pretty hard on Tony and his tweeting, his late night tweets and stuff like that. But this one here got to me in a different capacity because right now they're in the process of trying to negotiate a new television deal. And executives pay attention to what the bosses are doing at the companies that they're looking to do business with. And when they see stuff like that, that doesn't look very professional. If I'm sitting in the Turner Warner Brothers executive offices and somebody comes up to me and says, have you seen the tweets by so-and-so who's trying to negotiate a deal with it? And you look at it and go, okay, I'm going to be a little bit leery about doing business with this guy because, you know, he doesn't look professional. He doesn't come off as professional. Yes, he's catering to that fan base of his and that audience that it's just not the right time. Just, you know, pump the tires of your company. Do your best in promoting your brand instead of saying, oh, woe is us. Everybody's taking a shot at us because they're defending the other guys. Forget the other guys.
Right.
Just stay in your own lane. Who cares? You're trying to make it. Sorry, Flobo. He's trying to regurgitate this Monday Night War that'll never happen again because he's not going to run head to head on the same night with them. You know, just forget about that.
It's okay to be the alternative, Jimmy, and I think that's great. But I always ask this question. free TV is ad supported. So if I am Procter & Gamble, if I am Johnson & Johnson, if I'm Slim Jim, you haven't told me why I should invest in your product. Okay, I may know who Will Ospreay is, but if you're telling me like, wow, right, Women of Wrestling, look, we have these saturated characters, very strong women, I'm on board. NWA Power, throwback wrestling, I like it. You tell me it's a sports-based presentation, but you're the owner of this brand is treating it as if it's a circus, saying I cater to sickos. Why would the Limu Emu put a dollar down? And I'm just confused, you know?
Yeah. I wouldn't snap into a Slim Jim, you know, that's for sure. But yeah. No, I agree with you, Fulvio. From a professional standpoint, and it's not a shot at him personally, it's a shot at his business practices right now that just have me a little bit scratching my head.
Is there, I think, a better way that should be? Like, do you think somebody like a Paul Heyman would be on Twitter 20 years ago, 25 years ago, if that was a thing?
Yeah, I think he would be, but he would pick his spots. Paul Heyman is a brilliant guy at pumping up the brand that he's in. Look what he did for ECW. Look what he's done for everybody he's been associated with. Paul Heyman is a genius at getting not himself over, getting others over. And that's what he would do, I think, with his social media, with his Twitter. If he was in charge of a company right now, he would get that brand over big time and do it in a way only Paul Heyman could.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with that. I think Paul Heyman's career, whether it's ECW, WWECW, running the creative at Raw, being a backstage of a producer, is that he is a magician of making something not real a reality. And I always go back to when he was trying to put over Jinder Mahal versus Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series. I believed it. And that's been his brand. Yeah, there was a time where that meant barbed wire matches. But there's also a time when he comes out and goes, I'm Paul Heyman. And you think he's actually an advocate making deals backstage. That's what I want. I want a flavor. I want a brand. I want to tell people AEW is different because of blank.
I do want to talk a little about blood and wrestling, but I'm going to save that maybe for about 5 minutes because it's going to lead into what we said. But I do want to give a shout out to everybody in the chat for being with us in this little after party, after show for Dynamite. Guy Dylan Matthews, who's one of the OGs from back of the day. Oh, wrong one. Wrong show. But J.R. Smith, we got Joey Image, we got Laura Rock, we got Blue Chew, Kerry Johnson with the good evening. Throwback to Alfred Hitchcock. Spencer Webb, Adonde Estas? Shout out to him. But yeah, thank you everybody for joining us. We got Joey Image saying Heyman is brilliant. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anybody that will disagree. Spencer Webb thinks that people would have loved Heyman on Twitter. Then you have Joey Image saying AEW was labeled as the alternative to WWE when it started. It's become not that, but alternative WWE. Yeah, some yes or no, but we'll see how that ends up going.
I won't be a dead horse, but it was their mistake. You know,
yeah.
When you say something you're not, then all you need is a market leader to change who they are, and then you're out. Yeah.
When you say you're the alternative, prove it. Show me that you are. You know, big time. Instead of just saying it. And really quickly, before we move on, I know this is quite out of the box and way out of there. I just want to wish a good friend of mine, Mark Henry, the world's strongest man, the world's strongest analyst right now, a very happy birthday. It's good, you know, wish all the best, my friend. And, you know, God bless.
Whoa.
In my opinion, one of the absolute best hype songs, the 3-6 Mafia. Oh, my God. Like, if I'm sitting there in the ring, and I hear that, and Mark Henry's coming out. Yeah, no, thank you.
I'm running. If that back door is locked, no, I'm getting through it anyway.
Somebody's going to get their butt kicked. That's all I got to say about that.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But speaking of which, Dynamite started with how it should be started, for freaking sake, with the AEW World Champion and an unwelcome friend, Nana's butt crack. I don't know if you guys caught that.
I did not catch that. Thank goodness.
You didn't catch that, really?
I heard the commentary, but I didn't want to look up. I was doing my notes on the show.
Yeah. Anybody that wants to go back and watch back, and you'll see Nana should have pulled up his pants, or I guess boxers a little bit. But yeah, we saw a cool little swerve promo. To me, he looked like a world champion. Gets interrupted by the Elite. Then they announced Blood and Guts just randomly. I think that was just kind of weird that they announced it without feeling like there was anything building up to it. Maybe I'm wrong. But then they asked Swerve to join them in the Blood and Guts match. And then we see him turn it down, obviously, and the Acclaim come out and make the save. A lot going on. But what I did like, Jimmy, and I want to know your thoughts as well, is there was a lot of champions in the same ring. And to me, that image really felt like it was a big deal. Did you catch it at all? Was that similar, or was it just kind of like, especially with, we've been critical in the past with the way they start the show, or not even start the show, with the world champion just randomly in segment three or segment four, but was this, do you think, was a step in the right direction?
Yeah, it definitely is. This is where he should have been the night after, or the Dynamite after he won the championship, Swerve. And, I've been saying that forever, and people have been coming at me going, but he is the champion. Yes, I know he's a champion, so he should be presented as one. And I thought tonight he was presented as a big deal, like he should
be. From start to finish as well, I want to say
yes,
that.
Yes, and I love the reactions too, because you got the EVPs that came out, and they got the reaction they want to get. Their heels, and they were getting booed. Perfect. And when they entered that ring, you could feel the heat, you can feel the drama. I love the fact that all the champions were in the ring, almost all the champions.
Yeah.
Why didn't they let Jack Perry have that championship? Just when they handed it to him, just let him take it instead of going through this rigmarole of having a ladder match, in the future for it. Give it to him and then get to where you try to take it off him. But have all the EVPs in that group with a title, and that would have made more sense to me. And that's more heat too. But I was fine with it. I'm still on the fence with the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn coming out to help versus the EVPs for Team AEW. Uh-huh. I mean, yes, you want somebody relevant to back up the world champ, and again, no disrespect to them, but it just felt like, other than that, I thought the segment was done well.
What do you think, Flobo?
Well, the opening was great. It was a good way to, a good refreshing change for having the champ out there. It really set the tone of what Swerve needed to do. Real quick, I just want to shout out to Joey Image. Lancaster, PA gets a shout out. I call that area Turkey Hill Pro Wrestling, if it might be personally. But I thought it was pretty solid, pretty standard. Now, Swerve's title run is not necessarily a bad or good. It's kind of like fresh and different for AEW's direction. I like the fact that everyone's coming after this champ, because it's a way to make him feel like he's a workhorse champ without giving him the workhorse tag. But I asked this question about the EVPs. I know they're the antagonists. I know they're heels. But when they said Blood and Guts, I go, cool match. But Do I want to see them get beat up? I mean, I don't think I'm that annoyed by them. Or I don't think they're doing anything that's that nefarious. It's almost like we're so used to them being like the Deadpool of AEW. It's kind of like, okay, that's fine. But Swerve has bigger fish to fry. But very, very small gripe. Cool way to open the show. Can't complain.
I try to be very, very, very impartial in terms of not everything needs to be one specific way, but I do think they're underselling the blood and guts match. That shouldn't be something that the EVP should be pushing for. That should be in some ways like a punishment, right? Where it's like you have the EVPs, you know, and Okada and Jack Perry, maybe a match is announced against Team AEW. And then Tony Khan maybe comes out and says, or Chris Daniels says, hey, you know, you want to have this match, but guess what? It's going to be under my terms, and that's going to be blood and guts. Like, now I'm thinking, like, if the Bucks announcing that match or how it was, I'm like, okay, cool. Like, they're the ones pushing for it, so why should I be booing them? They're announcing a match that, as a fan, I want to see. So why should I? Like, they're doing something cool. I don't know. Maybe, was that just me?
No, my issue, sorry to cut you off there, Flo, but my issue is, this is the type of match that's a blow-off match, though. Mm-hmm. This should be the end of it. We've already got the one that we had at Double or Nothing, which, again, should have been some kind of blow, you know, end of a feud, end of a rivalry. And now we're getting another one that's kind of like an end of the rivalry, end of a feud type of match. So we're having several of those involving the EVPs, and they're the ones making the match. You're right, George. That, now that I think about it, you made me think, that kind of is backward booking.
It's like, and again, I really, really try hard to not be like, well, WWE did it this way, but you never saw like really Triple H announce that he's going to be in a Hell in a Cell match. It was always somebody else saying, you're going to be in a Hell in a Cell match, and then Triple H reacting the way he did. Right, like, I don't know. Yeah. I just feel like it was a little back-ass words, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does make it sound like it's an exhibition, and now it's an open sign-up sheet to beat up your boss. The match is going to be great. Blood and Guts is actually one of those ace in the hole moves. It's going to be on free TV, apparently, but it does seem kind of random, and I don't think that it's... I don't want to see them beat up that much. They already had the Anarchy match about a couple weeks ago. I'm pretty okay with a bit of time being spread out to the next big mountain, but then I'm picking nits at this point.
And I do want to add one more thing. Like, do you think maybe the lack of stakes is maybe hurting it a little bit? Because, like, you know, you had the Anarchy in the Arena. Okay, like, what did the winner get? What changed after the EVPs won that match? What changed after the Elite won? Like, you're still doing your thing. So, you know, do we need something? Like, what needs to be on the line for the Blood and Guts match?
If I had the pen, which I don't, the angle which would be a Blood and Guts worthy thing would be the Learning Tree. And we're going to get ahead of that, because that is someone that's getting under the skin of the fans watching. No one likes a Learning Tree. You can imagine if it was, hey guys, I'm going to show you how to wrestle at this giant thing. But it just kind of feels like when your boss comes in and goes, hey, you're going to have mandatory training on Thursday, is Blood and Guts, bring a pencil. And it's like, oh, okay. All right.
And there's no reasons. We need reasons. And like you guys said, what are the ramifications for after? You know, there's nothing at stake other than it feels like they're having the match just to have the match, because it's got a cool tag name to it. It's got a cool concept. Hey, yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to go viral for 5 minutes. But what then?
Yep. You're pretty spot on, which that whole segment led into the match, the TBS.
I'm lending Flobo my pencil.
the qualifying match for the TBS ladder match that's coming up at Forbidden Door between Dustin Rhodes and Jack Perry. Again, I don't want to talk about too much of the match Jack Perry won, but I do want to talk a little bit about something that, you know, I did want to talk about on this show, is what's everyone's thoughts on the whole blood in wrestling and the amount that we see it on AEW TV and pay-per-views. I waited till now to bring it up because we saw color in this match. We saw some blood coming out of Dustin Rhodes. I mean, I don't want to speak for everybody. I know some people just love it no matter what. Jimmy, I know being on the referee side, I'm sure you've had your fair share of matches where there was blood in the ring. Mm-hmm. Overall, like, what's your opinion on it? Do you think it's you know. Oh, look at that. You got a little scar from one time.
Oh yeah. Thank you, Animal from the Legion of Doom. But anyways, but as far as blood goes in matches, yes, it was at the time a necessary evil, but it didn't happen all the time. When it happens, when it happens too frequently, it ends up meaning nothing. Because I guess here we go again. Everybody's gonna say, "Well, there goes he's talking about WWE again." Yeah, because when we saw Cody get busted open by The Rock leading up to WrestleMania, it meant something. Because when was the last time you saw blood in WWE? Because they have the no blood policy, but they had an exception for that one spot, and it just made it mean so much more. If you have, like, God bless Moxley, I love the guy, but at the same time, it was like a running gag every week, you know, that he was going to get busted open and bleeding all over the place. And when you do it that often, it loses its cachet. It's got, oh, okay, we got some blood. Great. Now what? You know, that was, instead of going, oh my goodness, you know, you want to be shocked. You want to feel sympathy for the guy who's gotten, you know, who's bleeding all over the place, like Dustin did tonight. You wanted to feel that sympathy. And I did for Dustin, but at the same time, it would have meant a lot more if we hadn't seen so much of it in the past.
Take away maybe us seeing it in the past. Do you think it was good? It was a good placement in this specific match?
I thought weird right after they announced Blood and Guts coming up. I know you want to kind of make it feel like, oh, see, we have blood, you know, to kind of like, I don't know if it was intentionally done that way. To make it feel like, okay, Blood and Guts is coming up. Here's somebody who's shedding blood. The bigger issue I had with it was, anyways, I'll get to the finish when we get there. But maybe it was intentional. Maybe it was accidental where they didn't put the pieces together before they went in that direction. I don't know. It just, yeah. It felt out of place to me, to be honest.
What do you think, Clover?
Yeah, the thing about blood in AEW and blood in the Attitude Era, like, because I can't just sit here talking about nuance, right? I love Fast and Furious movies. Give me all the explosions. So it's not so much to me the amount of blood necessarily. Like, whatever. If I'm going to buy into a TV-14 product, I'm going to get some blood. I'm going to get people dropping swear words that we can't say on this after show, but it happens on the show itself. I think what annoys me as a fan is what causes the color, like in character. It's never like, oh, you got hit by a title or the ring bell. It's always like, oh, that turnbuckle was pretty rough. Or that DDT busted him open. I'm like, well, that makes me feel everyone is weak, but that can't be true. They're wrestlers, they're titans, they're stronger than I am. I'm just a lowly mortal. So the blood amount doesn't bother me. I just think that if you're going to go and do it, give me a reason to make that blood go, that's why he's busted open. Not, okay. Mm-hmm. It's because Dustin got pretty much shredded fairly easily today.
No, I would have preferred it if they had left that spot, the blood to the DDT on the floor, they peeled away the pad to expose the concrete. That, leave it at just that. You didn't need the exposed turnbuckle and then double down on the floor with it. Just that would have been enough, I think.
Am I overthinking it? Because when I saw the blood, I'm just like, Where is this going? My whole thing is, if I was like a booker or promoter or whatever, and somebody wants to do like a high spot or like a blood spot, I'm just going to be like, why? Not in terms of like a why isn't you shouldn't be doing it, in terms of why. Like, why do you think it's relevant to the match and the story that you're telling? Why do you have to jump off the top of the cage? Why do you have to involve Bob? Like, I want to know why you think this involves blood. And I just don't think this was like it needed the blood.
If you're asking about this match here with Jack Perry and Dustin, I think the idea is that you got Jack Perry. He's a bit of a slime ball. He's a scapegoat. So and Dustin is pretty much the closest thing we have to like that rah-rah cool baby face in a brand that doesn't really have those. So I understand what it is on paper. But I think when it happened, it just made Dustin look weak and not Jack making strong. I don't think anyone's going to be like, hey, he busted up Dustin Runnels last week. It's not going to translate. It's going to be like, oh. Well, that was a match. Now, what's going on to Jack?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm just like, I overthink things all the time. But I think of two things when I think of blood in wrestling. I think of Steve Austin and I think of Eddie Guerrero. What did it mean, like, for Steve Austin to bleed in that match? It meant everything. Mm-hmm. Like that actually was blood that were red turned to green.
George, I gotta stop you here. That is a very unfair example because those.
That is an unfair example.
It is,
but how much blood can mean something.
Okay, but let me tell you. The last time I saw blood on WWE, where I felt it make no sense. It was Cesaro, remember him, against Seth Rollins, and Cesaro got busted open, and he lost that match. And as a fan, I go, oh, I don't never believe him again. There's nothing really big about it. There was no pathos. There was no these guys are battling. It was a random match on Friday. Cesaro never recovered again as a character. I think I look at this and I go, they gave the idea to make me feel Jack Perry strong, but I don't believe it because we love Dustin so much.
Yeah. And as far as Jack Perry feeling so strong, that's where I had the issue. And I'm getting off the blood topic here with the finish, with the cover, the way he covered and the way he reacted after he got the pinfall win with that cockiness where he's running his fingers through his hair and he's laying on Dustin like that. He squeaked out a win against an all-timer. Mm-hmm. You know, he should have shown a little bit more like, whew, thank God I got through that match. You know, I had to outsmart him big time instead of just, yeah, I had this thing in the bag. I get that he's playing the cocky character who's a little bit of a slime ball, but at the same time, you got to show a little bit of different emotion where you know, you had a struggle, where you had to fight, where you had to outsmart him by, you know, the kick in the yam bags when the referee wasn't looking. And at least Dustin sold it, unlike someone else in the match. But anyway, you know, and show that, like, oh, man, I had to cheat to beat this guy, but I got there. Show that kind of emotion where I could kind of resonate with it instead of going for the cheap heat where I'm, yeah, that cocky individual.
Yeah, it was fun. Let's move on. We saw a promo with Kyle O'Reilly, Mark Briscoe, and Orange Cassidy. We saw a little, you know, cameo from Willow. This was fun. This was just a fun promo, Flobo. What do you think?
I like these guys together. I like the fact that Briscoe could have easily been watching the bee. Here's a shiny little title. ROH don't really give it any kind of gravitas, but in a world where there's so many belts in AEW, at least the ROH still has that edge, and Briscoe's doing a good job. They're a nice combination. Now, we'll get to the match in a second, but I like this promo backstage.
I was entertained.
Yeah, it really showed a lot of charisma coming out of Mark Briscoe. And, you know, don't forget, he's still the Ring of Honor world champion. So he's still got some gold around him. And then we saw Rush versus Dion Russman.
I bet the red on Dion, man. I'm kind of bummed out. The match is great.
Rush with the annihilation, I guess you can say, but that was not the story of the match. The story was Rush, after keep beating on Dion, we saw MJF come out to what I thought was a big pop, and then they brawl all over. I do want to point out, Jimmy, because I know this is one of your gripes when it comes to the way they announce matches. It just kind of like, you know, leads to just all of a sudden, it's like, oh, and by the way, MJF and Rush is going to kick off Dynamite next week. I can already see you rolling your eyes. Is it all you want is maybe like, oh, hey, I just got a text or something like that? Is that all you need for it to maybe make sense a little bit?
Why don't you wait till you come back from commercial break or something like that and announce it then, so it makes it look like somebody put some thought into it instead of, yeah, we had this programmed already. That's how it felt. And, you know, other than that, I thought the brawl was fine except for the beginning of it. There are two things in the brawl I didn't like. The beginning, because MJF hit the ring and they started throwing kind of punches at each other. If I'm in a fight with someone, I'm not a fighter. Let me put it that way. I'm not a guy who will stand toe-to-toe with you and start throwing fists. I'm going to try and take you down. I'm going to try and smother you as best I can and take you off your feet and try to get on top of you anyway. I didn't see any of that. All it was fist, fist, fist. Let's throw until security came in to break it up. And that's when they started getting physical. And then they fought through the crowd. They went to the back, which is cool. All that stuff going on back there, still trying to break it up. MJF puts Rush through the table and Rush gets back up like nothing happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
And I went to myself, is this guy going to the Orange Cassidy School of Selling? You know, come on, man. It's a table. Make it mean something. Anyways,
I want to ask you, Flobo. So they announced MJF versus Rush. This is MJF's first match in about 6 months since World's End at the end of 2023. They're going to be in Long Island in a few weeks for Forbidden Door. do you think a match like this, or his first match back, should be at that pay-per-view, or do you think it's okay to have it a couple weeks before on free TV?
I would be a hypocrite if I complained about Mercedes Moné not wrestling to a pay-per-view event and be like, oh, wait to the big show. You got MJF back. We got to know what the if there's any new moves. We got to know what the new attire means, if that's his demeanor. This is how it's set up. Rush needs to be pretty much cannon fodder for the new MJF everywhere anyway. So it wasn't like this main event opponent. So I'm on board. I'm with you guys. I thought the match being announced was kind of quick. Like, was there like a security guard telling the GM, be like, hey man, I think they're beating each other up. Make a match for next week. Like, they're still fighting now. But at the same time, give me a preview of what this guy can do, this new version, if there is a new version of MJF, what he can do.
My question is, why are they beefing again?
Well, MJF wants to be the best, and so does Roosh, and it's sports-based entertainment, George. I don't know.
Is it just that? I'm being serious, too, because I'm thinking MJF comes back. He should be going after the World Championship. If not, he should be going after maybe the Undisputed Kingdom. I know Adam Cole is still hurt, but they keep mentioning, like, Wardlow and, you know, how MJF took everything away from Wardlow and after that, or after that match at Double or Nothing a few years ago. So Is it a little disappointing they're not continuing that story with the, you know, with the masked men, and or are we completely just, you know what, that failed, let us not even bring it up ever again?
So I complained about this at the last pay-per-view, and that whole Adam Cole return just to have him stomped out was them saying that chapter's closed, we're done with it. Mm-hmm. But you would think if someone at the caliber of MJF, if he's going to be a player, yes, his first match back should be a kind of a feeder match, but he should be slotted in into the many title divisions that need opponents, personally in AEW.
Yeah, but like, look at his return promo on Dynamite on live TV, not at the pay per view. Look who he called out. And list the names that he called out everybody, heel, face, it didn't matter. He called out everybody. And, you know, is he going to be that kind of tweener guy that bounces back and forth and doesn't matter who he faces? Right now, the crowd loves him, so he should be going after guys who are hated. It, you know, don't try and get the crowd split on who he faces, because if he goes after, let's say, a guy like Swerve, who's a babyface right now, now the crowd's going to kind of want to be, you know, on the fence. If he goes after a guy, he mentioned Will Ospreay too. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go after him, guess what? People are going to cheer for MJF as well. It's weird when people cheer for both guys. Mm-hmm. I get it. You know, that fan base goes, yeah, but we like both guys. Yeah, yeah, but that's not how you draw money.
Well, you guys got a good point. Then we saw that six-man tag that we talked about earlier, Orange Cassidy, Mark Briscoe, and I have Mark Briscoe on twice for some reason. Orange Cassidy, Mark Briscoe, and I can't think of the guy. That's very good. Up against, it was Kyle O'Reilly.
Kyle O'Reilly.
Kyle O'Reilly. Cassidy, Briscoe, and Kyle O'Reilly up against Konosuke Takeshita, Kyle Fletcher, and Roderick Strong. I see this match on paper, and this is the part where I feel silly. Because I'm like, oh, of course the faces are going to win. Of course they're going to have Orange Cassidy win, because they like to have him win. But the faces lost, which I dug, and made me kind of humble myself in some ways, because I'm like, maybe I should just enjoy the match more and not have to worry about, you know, who's going to win, who's going to go over. But I guess the big story is, and I want to say, because somebody mentioned it earlier, that the ROH champion got pinned in a throwaway six-man tag. I wouldn't say that immediately, because he got pinned by the Ring of Honor TV champion. So if maybe that leads to something, maybe it doesn't. I hope so. But what did you think of this six-man overall, Jimmy?
I thought it was fun. It was exactly what it was meant to do. It was meant to entertain that crowd, and that's exactly what they did. Again, if I'm going to get nitpicky, I just didn't like the way the finish went about with the referee distraction when they distract for like 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just take too long. That's all. But other than that, I thought the match was fine. It was fun. It was entertaining. And you're right, George. It kind of threw me off. I went, oh, heels went over. Yay, cool. Just wasn't a big fan of how they did it. That's all.
It was the kind of match that would have, in any other week, but have been the 8:05 p.m. open the card, right? I was, in fact, to the point where I think Orange Cassidy's music might as well be the Dynamite theme song. But yeah, actually, until we get to the other half of the show, this was my favorite match of the night because it was so high paced. It definitely felt it was a different clip. These men are hungry for TV time. Everything was great. I enjoyed the segment top to bottom.
The second part where I'm like, humbled myself in some ways where Willow's music gets played and I'm like, why is it getting played? Like, who is she going to come out and save? But it's all because Statlander came out and had to, you know, put in a little beating on her. The people love Willow, and I think it created some excellent more heat for Statlander.
No, it did do that, but it didn't confuse me. It did confuse me right at the beginning when Willow came out, and I'm thinking, well, what's she going to do against all these guys?
Yeah.
How's she going to, you know what I mean? It just felt a little weird there, but then when Statlander came out and took her out, and I said, that's why it happened. Now yeah. I know why.
It looks like things are starting to make a little bit more sense, Flobo.
I like it. I want more women's segments. I want more women's matches. We got an early one and a longer one today, but I think there's a perfectly a ripe environment for more stories like this.
Yeah, I mean, I get into semantics a little bit as far as like when music hits, like how they decide in the land of kayfabe, like how they decide. When to play someone's music, and I'll get into that at the end of the show because I noticed that more so when that happened, where I'm like how do you know like when to play it? Do you see somebody coming out, you know, to the ring, you know, in the go position? Say, sure. Oh, I should play that person's music. I don't know.
I thought about this. I feel like in my mind, the world of wrestling, you have a band that goes with you everywhere, and once you go through a certain door, they play it. But it always gets shattered when someone goes, "Hit my music." I'm like, "No, don't do that."
Yeah. We're giving away the secret now. Right before you exit into the gorilla position to go out to the ring, there's a QR code. You hold your phone up, and your music plays automatically.
You can. Oh my God! I gotta save this guy. Hold on. Let me scan my QR code real quick. Okay. Good. Let me go back out there. You know, I can't go out there without my music.
You showered before and we were late for work, right? It's the same deal. You got to make sure your stuff's in order.
Yeah. I mean, kind of going off topic real quick, because I remember like last year they had Kevin Owens come out from like the opposite side of the entrance. And it's like, so obviously the music hits and then everybody's looking at the entrance music at the entrance ramp. Oh, he's coming out. And then he comes behind him. So I'm so like overthinking things where like, how did somebody know when to play Kevin's music? Like, did you just assume that he was going to come out and make the save? And I don't know. It just wrestling.
He texted someone in the truck, said, "Hit my music."
Yeah. Oh, look at that. That's all I needed. That's all I needed, and now I can live on with my life. Shingo Tagaki announces his plan for the Owen. This Owen's it's getting stacked. It's not just a bunch of jabronis, and I like that. It's now that they announce it's going to be the winner goes on to face the AEW champion at All In. I don't know. I'm digging this tournament a lot more than previous years.
No, I am too. I like that there's stakes involved.
Yeah.
Yes, it is a tribute tournament, but at the same time, now that you're putting a championship match on the line as well, it just makes it that much more intriguing. And like you said, adding some name value to this tournament makes it that much more interesting and gets people invested.
Yeah, 1,000%. We had Chris Daniels announce some matches for the Elite. One of those championship contender eliminator matches. They didn't announce who Okada was going to face, but they announced Young Bucks versus the Acclaimed. So that should be fun. We haven't seen the Bucks defend their championships since they won them back at Dynasty. So I'm doing it again. Back at Dynasty. So we'll see how that goes. Speaking of tag teams, we saw the Premier Athletes go up against Samoa Joe and Hook. Flobo, give me a name for Samoa Joe and Hook, because you know me, I hate when there's a tag team without a name.
Oh, wow. How long? Do you want something long like the world's greatest tag team, or do you want something like the Hitmen or something weird like that?
Give me anything at this point.
Wow. I got nothing. it's so random. They're so different. I mean, what would actually work, you know?
I mean, wow. if it was the Jericho method, it'd just be like Joe Hook or something like that.
Right. You can't call him the Handsome Devils, because, I mean, I like Samoa Joe. I'm afraid of Samoa Joe, but I don't think he's a hooker. So.
Did you ever work with Samoa Joe back in the day? Back in your indie wrestling days? Flobo.
No, I PA'd for WWE a couple times when it was in Ontario, and I had to like run Joe's laundry a couple times, but I can't say I worked with him.
No,
I can't say I worked with Joe.
I know, so I'm going to totally put you over now. I know you got a lot of Southern California roots, so I know you've worked with LA Knight, Brian Cage, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I was curious if you ever worked with Samoa Joe, considering that he did a lot back in the UPW days, I know. And shout out to Johnny and RIP.
Rest in peace. Well, he's like a passion ship tonight. It was always like, oh, Samoa was here last week for a seminar. You're like, last week? Why didn't anyone tell me?
We see a promo from Stephanie Vaquer. Is that am I saying it right? Vaquer?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Marie. I didn't mean to be that way.
Yeah. Either way, I'm digging. You know, we're seeing a lot more video packages, and I do want to just kind of maybe put it all together. We saw a video package go on Twitter a couple days ago about Mina Shirakawa, and a lot of praise because we're finally seeing what we all asked for, and that is just introduce us. I don't let us know who these people are just with a random tweet. Oh, by the way, so and so's facing Kenny Omega, and I'm like, why is Kenny Omega facing this jabroni? Oh, apparently he's somebody, you know. So is this a step in the right direction, Jimmy? Are we finally seeing something that – are they finally listening to us here at Wrestling Inc. about these video packages introducing some of these people?
Well, somebody there must be listening because they are starting to do it. I just don't want them to do it where it's 1 week. At least we're getting them several weeks in a row. You don't want it 1 week, and then the next week, all of a sudden, here they are on television. Give us a couple of weeks. Give us a couple of different video packages as opposed to the same one week after week. Let us get to know who these individuals are, and that will get people more interested in when they finally do debut and get a reaction.
And especially a lot for the women as well. So shout out to all the effort that they're putting in, all the time and effort they're putting into the women's division. Little things like this, people think it means nothing, but it really means, like, it really goes a long way.
Right.
I'm with you. I don't want to disparage the tough job of commentary, but then that puts us a lot less burden on Excalibur, right? If you're the voice of the play-by-plays and the matches being announced, someone's entire backstory being told on commentary can get lost in the wash, right? Mm-hmm. If you look at like MLW, if you look at WWE, they're very promo heavy for a reason, to cleanse the palate. So the fact there is more of that stuff, I'm digging it.
And speaking of which, and I'll go back to the Mercedes Moné match in a second. Speaking of which, we see a backstage segment with Toni Storm and Mariah May. They are going to have a contract sign, a good old-fashioned contract signing to make it official for Forbidden Door. And it looks like Mariah May is going to be right in the middle. Do you have any predictions for what's going to happen, Jimmy?
My prediction? Pain.
I wish I had pain.
Yeah, I wish there was something better, but I will say this. Toni Storm is just brilliant. She entertains me every week. She's one of the best things going on AEW right now. And keep this train going, man, because it's very, very a lot of fun.
I want to start
a lot of fun. That doesn't sound...
I want to start a GoFundMe so we can all get chin, tits, shoe, t-shirts. And we all have to wear them every single week.
Is that before losing a bet or after?
Let's go after.
Nice.
The bet is you got to say it five times fast.
I can't even do it.
We'll get to monetize
once. Yeah.
It's either that or the Learning Tree t-shirt. So,
guys.
Take your pick. But yes, we saw Mercedes Moné against Zeuxis. I'm Hispanic and I'm having trouble saying it. You know, Zeuxis, that's Stephanie Vaquer's teammate in CMLL. I do want to ask something specific, Jimmy. The TBS championship, and again, the TNT kind of goes along with it. Are you okay with seeing these championship defenses against just maybe random people? Is that what the TBS championship is for maybe that kind of open challenge kind of that kind of feel? Because we saw that back in the day with the TNT championship as well.
Well, I guess it's supposed to be the workhorse championship since the world champion is not on TV. But at the same time, you have... Why not have people from your own company who have been fighting, you know, for a TV spot forever? You have so many people under contract. What is it? Over 150 people under contract?
Seems
now,
like
you know, and you have a strong women's division. That is a strong women's locker room. You don't need to go outside. Yes, I get it. It's a nice image where you bring in people from CMML or whatever the place may be, you know, from Japan, from other promotions. You know, the Forbidden Door, so to speak. It seems more like they should change the pay-per-view to Open Door, you know, because, but I understand the concept. You're trying to make it seem like people from elsewhere want this championship and want a shot at it. At the same time, you've got so many great, talented people in-house that can benefit more from this opportunity than they can.
And especially, like, God forbid Mercedes gets hurt, but we saw her, you know, get hurt about a year ago. If whatever reason she has to drop the title, now she's got Zeuxis against Stephanie Vaquer, Forbidden Door. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like they should have saved that championship defense for Forbidden Door. Flobo, what did you think of this match?
I think it was my match of the night. I've been very critical on the return to Mercedes Moné. A lot of things I don't like. I don't like that theme song. It sounds very, very try hard. I don't like the fact it's essentially Sasha Banks with a different name. But that said, all negative aside, what makes Sasha Banks, wow, what makes Mercedes Moné super elite, I'm sorry, what makes super elite is that she can make anyone into a star. Now here is Zeuxis, someone who I hadn't seen a match before, I'd be the first one to admit this. But in 10 minutes and 9 seconds, I wanted to see more of this talent. It really felt like she went back and forth. I felt like the selling was on point. It really made me go, wow, there is a step in the right direction AEW can really do and really play a part on that Worlds Collide multiverse thing and have Mercedes be the gatekeeper for that. And that may be the hook that separates that from an NXT, from an MLW, from an Impact. So I was on board with this one. This really opened my mind a little bit. Kind of favorite match of the night, even beyond the six-man tag.
I said it a couple weeks ago, is we're finally, and I don't want to say finally, because we saw it in WWE as well, but we're really seeing just how good Mercedes can be now that she can kind of branch off against so many different people. With that said, I'm going to go off topic really fast, just, you know, really quickly. Do you guys see, because it's a hot topic, Natalya maybe taking a similar path in maybe signing, maybe not signing with AEW, but maybe branching off and wrestling against some of these great talents that are literally global?
I think that's the only way that I can believe in Natalya. And it's not a knock on Natalya Nyheart herself. I think she's a fantastic and a multi-world championship holder, but I think she has lost enough matches that when she comes out inside the WWE universe, all that legacy is kind of like a footnote. Yeah, she did that stuff. But I feel like if she went to Impact or MLW or even NWA and was like, no, I am the Natty Neidhart, I think it's a perfect place to really put new women over while making them stars and really reaffirming the years and decades that Natalya's put into the game. So I think that would be a best case scenario for everybody.
Yeah, the only way I could see her going to AEW at this point would be to in a tribute capacity for, you know, her Uncle Owen, who she adored. But other than that, I like the idea of her going, doing the indie thing and testing the waters there, because the name value is there. You know, she could command her own price. She could do her own thing. She could travel when she wants, where she wants, for who she wants. And, you know, it worked for people like Matt Cardona and others, you know, and, you know, people are speculating about Ricochet right now. So there's a lot of places in play in the indie scene, and others, like you mentioned, other places like you mentioned, Flobo, are thriving right now. So it might be worth testing those waters as well.
I tried to do this a couple weeks ago and it didn't really work out. So I'm going to try with Flobo. Flobo, I need your best impression of the opening part of Chris Jericho's theme song.
Oh, I am the learning tree.
There we go. Yeah, you get A for effort, because guess what? It's TV time with the learning tree, Chris Jericho.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys. You know, who needs more TV time? I know he does. That's the only part of the spiel that I like. I want to ask you, Flobo, first, because based off what we talked about last week, it looks like Chris Jericho is growing on Jimmy. It's growing on Jack. Definitely not growing on me. What say you, Flobo? How's this new character of Chris Jericho? Is it growing on you, or do you think it's just a waste of TV time?
I don't like Jericho himself, because I really feel like this character is very one-dimensional. It's just him being like him just teaching people what to do. It's not really a character. It's a character trait. It's a movement. It's an action, right? It's not a full character. That said, Brian Keith being like this stone face, like hype man, be like, you better respect Jericho.
That's
to
good.
Me, it's hilarious, man. I would pay more for that. So I don't know. I'm torn. I'm down the middle.
Is it still growing on you, Jimmy, after this week?
A little less after
the ending. Did it kind of stay stagnant for a week?
it stayed stagnant for a week. Let's put it that way. But I do like what Flo said. I do like that Keith Lee is very stone-faced, and Big Bill is kind of like the in-betweener, and Jericho is just so over the top that it's kind of I don't want to say he's entering R-Truth territory because nobody can get that, but he is buying into this whole spiel that, you know, the internet rumors of him being selfish and wanting TV time. Well, you know what? Guess what? I'm going to buy into it, and you guys can tweet all you like on your Twitter machines.
I do think Brian Keith's the best part, but we saw a Private Party come out because they were the guests on TV time. And I guess they were asking Chris Jericho how exactly to come off the top rope. Obviously, it was just a scam for Private Party to come in and get their, you know, get their stuff in. When are we going to see this tag team match between Private Party and I guess Brian Keith and Big Bill? Or do we see Chris Jericho involved in some point?
Is anybody interested in it?
I don't think the crowd was interested, to be honest.
I was just thinking that when Private Party came out, the popo meter was unplugged or something. I don't know.
Not the popo meter.
Because I feel like they got a thing going where it really can help, you know, it really gets the crowd involved with the shots, whatever it is. Maybe some kid doesn't even know what that means. Mm-hmm. So they have something going. Like, is this, Flobo, I do want to ask you, do you think this is going to be what gets Private Party to the next level?
The answer is no. Because it's the most hated thing that is going, and by hated, I mean like the internet doesn't really like it. So whatever gets seen, it may be appreciated ironically. By that, I mean some content creator is going to be like, the top worst moments of the learning tree. But I will say this, I didn't think they were employed. Like, it's been years, it felt like, that Private Party was even in the mix. And so seeing them out there and doing that spot, if I were the guy with the pen, thanks, Jimmy, I'll probably put them on a run on Saturday to see if they can carry up some favor again, because I remember where they were the linchpin of the best tag team division in all of professional wrestling. They have some value still. Why not show them here? So shout out to Jericho Vortex working out this week.
We'll see how it ends up going. We saw Bullet Club Gold, I guess, challenge the House of Black. Which is weird because they're the champions. They should be challenged instead of challenging, but I digress. We saw Daniel Garcia versus Nick Camarado. That's a guy that I didn't know was still employed. I guess kind of a bit of a squash. I mean, nobody thought that Daniel Garcia was going to lose. Am I the only one?
No, not at all.
Yeah. And then we had Will Ospreay come in and kind of, you know, scout some of the guys that's going after the international championship. Then we had a cool Pac promo, Pac entering the Owen Cup. So again, continues to be stacked full of just great talent. It should be fun when we finally see these brackets get announced at some point. And we saw our main event. This was 7 days in the making. We saw Phoenix win a four-way championship number one contender match last week, and now we saw the culmination of that that seven-day build. But we saw a lot of cool clips based on previous matches all on Twitter this past week on what they're going to do, what they've done before. Looking forward to it. Do you think this match delivered like you thought it was going to be, Jimmy?
It was what I expected it to be, if that makes any kind of sense.
In a good way, right?
Well, it catered to that audience.
Yeah.
It wasn't, a lot of the stuff I saw wasn't my cup of tea, and the stuff they did was incredible. It was very athletic. It was definitely different from what I'm used to and my style that I prefer. That's just me, but that audience was eating it up, and that's the main thing. You're catering to a certain audience, and there's catering to your audience, and it worked for them. I just don't know how someone tuning in to watch something like this for the first time, let's say someone just happened to be tuning in to see what's coming on TBS next, watched this and went, oh, this isn't the wrestling I remember back in the day. This is something complete. And now for something completely different, you know, that was it. I don't know.
What are your thoughts, Flip? Oh, go ahead, Jimmy.
I said, these guys can do some fantastic things. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm going to get it from all the Will Ospreay. I'm not saying he's a terrible guy in the ring. He can do some incredible things. It just, at times, looks too choreographed.
Mm. What do you think, Flobo?
I think wrestling is supposed to be combat. So, to Jimmy's point, if I'm flipping through or if someone goes, hey, man, come over to my house and watch AEW Dynamite, the main event kind of hit everything. It was high octane. It had an overrun. They told us as much. It was high speed. It was definitely a different style compared to what's going on Monday and Friday nights. But as somebody who watches AEW every week, I'm sitting there going, how many times? How many times am I going to see Rey Fénix in a main event on his back at the end of it? Like, do you still believe in this guy? Like, I think he's great. I think the Lucha Brothers are fantastic. But when he goes, oh, that's our main event, I go, oh, well, see you next week, fellas, because he ain't have a chance. And I do think I know it's sports entertainment. I know it's predetermined. But when it comes down to it, wins and losses matter to a point. And now I don't believe in Will Ospreay's opponent before the bell even rang.
Interesting. Different perspective. I like it, but that wasn't the end of the show. We saw Swerve be ringside for the entire match, scouting his future opponent for Forbidden Door, and then he ended up getting in the ring. This, to me, was just the epitome of just everything Swerve should be. He looked like a champion, and then we saw some drama. Like, he was sitting there getting in his face, and he got the championship belt snatched from him. Were you not a fan of that, Jimmy?
No, I didn't mind it.
Okay.
But what I wasn't a fan of is him stopping, pausing for as long as he did, turn around and look. I would have rather seen Swerve, you snatch that belt, give it 2 seconds, and bam, take him out. Make people believe that you know, that was disrespectful beyond belief. For me, him not doing anything about it and just going back and taking it back and then, you know, leaning in and talking in his ear, I would have preferred to see a different Swerve there. I wanted to see him say, you don't touch my property until I allow you to, or something along those lines. And you want to hold this title? You have to come and beat me for it. You don't touch my property. And after he lays him out, this comes out, you know, if you can get him on his back long enough.
He did kind of mention in his ear, though, like, you know, I like you, you're my friend, but if you were anyone else, you'd be in the grave right now. Did that have any...
Still, friend or foe, you don't do that.
It's like touching the cup, you know? Mm-hmm. You don't touch the Stanley Cup. That's bad juju.
Yeah, I know, exactly. That's why the Stanley Cup is in Toronto, because that's the only time the Maple Leafs will ever see it.
But, oh, snap!
Anyway. What do you think?
As an Islanders fan, I approve that. Took hours from us. I say this. I was on board with the image of Ospreay with both. I actually like the Swerve saying, you're my friend, and that's the way I'm getting to it. Because we've seen Swerve go full on, right? With the whole Nick Wayne thing 2 years ago, the whole Moxley thing. So I like the restraint here. But to me, it felt like it was in slow motion. If that was like half the speed of like the, you took it, hey, look, you get a pass, next time it's whatever, that'd have been great. But him being like, oh no, my belt is no longer in my possession, I think that made him look weak. I was like, do something. You know what I mean? Like, come on, do a little dance, do a little, you know.
Yeah, like going back to what I mentioned earlier, I don't know if it was intentional, I don't know if it wasn't, but when you had Swerve kind of walking toward Ospreay after he took his belt back, and right when he's about to say what he's about to say, his music hits, and it's like, I don't know, I that kind of did take me out a little bit, where I'm like now I'm distracted by the music that I can't really focus on what Swerve's saying. Is that overthinking? Is that just little? Do you think it's those little things that really matter that make a big deal at the end of the day?
Yeah, it definitely is, because that's something that shouldn't be overlooked. That's when the producers and the people, the talent in the match, need to get with the people in the truck. Tell him, listen, this is what we're doing. At the end of the match, there's going to be this confrontation. He's going to lean in and say something. We want the cameras to pick it up. Mm-hmm. We want the handhelds to pick it up. Don't hit his music. And not only that, you'll get that crowd reaction when he leads it too. You'll be able to hear that instead of hearing this loud music instead. So there has to be communication on all parts there.
What do you think, Flobo?
I think that you hit the nail on the head. I can read across the board. I mean, it's messy, but in a good way. I think there's some room to really build on some things here, and can't complain.
An episode I think heavy on future ramifications, especially for Forbidden Door. I gotta go. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or thumbs in the middle. What do you guys think?
I'm gonna go roller coaster.
I'm gonna give one of those Orange Cassidy ones. I think ultimately it was a positive. You know what I mean? I think I like the promos. I love the more of the time for the women. I love those multiple segments. Even the gripes I have are just for the sake of discussion. Ultimately, it was a good time to spend a Wednesday night.
Before we wrap up, I know you have your own YouTube channel, Flobo. Do you want to let people know where people can follow you?
Oh, yeah. At YouTube.com/FloboVoice. We got me and Jack Farmer combined like Voltron. Wednesday to talk about NXT. We call it Draped in Gold. Make sure you check about that. But this weekend, Wrestling Inc. is doing Clash at the Castle coverage. Jack Farmer and I will be doing the after show. So make sure we get up super early on the West Coast and check out the pay-per-view, or PLE, I should say. On Wrestling Inc. exclusively.
Yeah, you can't call it PLE, or you can't call it a pay-per-view. Bubba Ray will get mad. But I do have one question for you, Flobo. Which,
I hate Bubba Ray. No, I'm just kidding.
What? Which one of the Killer Bees was your favorite?
Bagwell?
Yeah, which you're thinking of the American males.
Yeah.
Killer Bees.
I think the Houston Ash shows of the 90s. I don't know.
Oh, I see what you mean. No. The former WWF team, the Killer Bees. Which one was your favorite?
I didn't have a favorite. That was before my time.
Well, mine was Bree Brian Blair. What about you, Jimmy?
Well, I have to go with Bree Brian Blair because this week we had him on the Roughing It Up podcast. And man, he's just got some stories. It's a lot of fun. You got to check that out. And also, you got to check out here. Wrestling Inc. Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Fridays. And now this weekend after Clash at the Castle, check it out. There's going to be a hell of a Flobo and Jack. You guys do a hell of a job after the pay-per-views. Keep kicking it, my friend. And of course, you can catch my ref and rants every Monday to Friday on all my social media platforms where I just make little critiques to what I think tighten the screws that I believe need tightening because those opinions there are mine and mine alone. And also on the Ref and It Up podcast, lately, I've been doing this new little segment with JK and the Sunshine Band, Corderas Karaoke. So having a little fun with that. Maybe you want to check that out and just hit me up on Twitter and let me know how much you dislike it.
Oh, and Ref the Chef, right? Don't forget about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do a little bit of that, too. Yeah.
What don't you do?
I was looking for something very specific right now that I couldn't find. Nope. I'll save it for next time. Oh, no. There it is. And also, this bad boy. Look at that. You see that?
Yeah, my memoir, Graduation Day, available wherever books are sold. Actually, it's available only on Amazon. If you want to read all about my L's and all my adult lessons I learned, check it out.
And you can follow me at G Hermosa, GHERMOZA. You can follow my wrestling channel on YouTube, the Wrestling Chatter YouTube channel, and on social media, TW Chatter. And we'll see you guys next week. Can't wait.
Yeah, I'm still looking for that Legends deal.
Sign the man.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.